This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade coming your direction. We're finishing out a strong week. There's a lot going on. This hour, we're going to be joined by Carmen Maria Montiel. She's a businesswoman, former journalist, and one of the 16 candidates vying for representative of Sylvester. I forgot his name. He just eluded me. The guy that just died, sadly, he died right after the president's address. Sylvester Turner in Houston, Texas, in the district, the 18th district. So now they got everybody lining up for the special election. The election's going to be November 4th. If no one gets 50% of the vote, they'll have their runoff with the top two. And she hopes to be one of them. And, of course, there's a lot of controversy in that race. We got the Patriot Awards coming up. Don't forget, they're going to be November 6th, Thursday at 8 o'clock. It is star-studded. We can't give away all the surprises, but just know that if you can get tickets, you will not regret it. The Tillis Center at the campus of Long Island University. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We're saying that if you're an ICE agent and you do these things, we think you ought to be held accountable. And yet no one in Washington, no one above them, no supervisor, no inspector general is holding anybody accountable.
That is Governor Pritzker, who embarrassed himself last night in a special report. Over the line, radical Dems like him make ICE their targets and are pushing the federal government to take them on as a major slapback from Pam Bondi is now should be felt by Pelosi and by Pritzker.
Number two.
It's too easy to manipulate something which seems otherwise small and inconsequential to the overall score. We're trying to put in place and learning as we go some additional control to prevent sort of some of that manipulation.
So that is Adam Silver on ESPN yesterday. Major gambling bust that could blow up the NBA. The feds arrested 30, including three NBAers, in a massive gambling scam. This was a crime we all could see coming in some way, shape, or form when 39 states legalize it. Now they want to get the inside track on it, and there's so much money in it. We'll talk about that.
Number one.
Well, I think it's high time we went after this thing that was polluting our population so much. So we're stopping the sea traffic, but we're also demonstrating to Maduro,
yes,
by this military presence, change your behavior.
Absolutely. That is General Jack Keane with me this morning on Fox and Friends. President Trump makes it clear we own this hemisphere. And cartels, you are the ISIS of our hemisphere. Be a friend like El Salvador and Argentina, or you'll be an enemy like Colombia, Brazil, and Venezuela, and we will destroy you. That's the message. President turns up the heat on Russia in a way that has united allies and got the attention of China and India. What do I mean by that? China has agreed to curtail, air quotes, their purchase of Russian oil and gas. India has too, to avoid 50% sanctions. Hopefully that brings us closer to a trade deal. Russia is so concerned about President Trump's announcement of no Hungary meeting and in Budapest, and here come the sanctions, that they didn't report it. And part of the reason, you usually have them blast back, Medvedev and Peskov usually have statements, and they usually, not this time. Number one, because they portray Donald Trump as somebody they can work with. All of a sudden, they got to tell the Russian public, who's used to being lied to, all of a sudden they expect him to say he's irrational, and Joe Biden too. That's, in the Russian mindset, doesn't work. I love the fact that the EU had a meeting yesterday, and they're going to fund with the best they can the Ukrainian effort for the next 2 years. And they got to do themselves a favor and unfreeze the Russian assets. Now that $300 billion, Belgium does not want to do it, and I can't figure out why. The other story is what's happening in our hemisphere. And what's happening in our hemisphere is that the president cares about it. First time in my lifetime. You know, we've heard for the longest time, Central and South America, You know, we had the immigration problem, but we never had the attention. This president, with 74% of Republican support and 82% support from the Trump world, the MAGA world, he's going after Central and South America to straighten it out. But why? That's where the drugs come up, and that's where the illegal immigrants come up. A lot of this because of their failed economic policies, and China is able to get themselves in there. I should have picked up on where the president would be doing when his first comments as the president at the 47th term, when he said, I want the Panama Canal back. I want China out, and I want you to get out of the Belt and Road program. And believe it or not, they did. Now, in terms of Ukraine, the president was asked this by our own Aisha Hosni about the impact that he hopes to have with these sanctions on these two behemoth oil, Russian oil companies that we've put on them. Cut 32.
President Putin basically said today that Russia is immune from U.S. sanctions. He said that it would not impact the Russian economy in any serious way. Is he
good.
Wrong?
I'm glad he feels that way. That's good. I'll let you know about it in 6 months from now. Okay, let's see. Let's see how it all works out.
This is what Putin said. This is an unfriendly act towards Russia, and it doesn't strengthen relations between Russia and the United States that only began to get restored. But no self-respecting country and no self-respecting people are ever decide anything under pressure. Now, they're working on another long-range missile themselves as Ukraine, but they do want our Tomahawks. Jack Keane says, my research says in 6 weeks the Ukrainians could be trained on this. The president said it's going to take too long to train them on this, at least 6 months. Here's what Putin said about possibly giving Tomahawks to Ukraine. If a strike is made on Russian territory with such a weapon, that response will be serious, if not staggering. Let's let them think about it. Really? I'm not too worried about it because we've been watching this guy make threats for 3 or 4 years. They can't move. I think they move 1 mile in a year with their big offensive. What they do are they're great at bombing kindergartens like Hamas because they're basically come into a terrorist nation. Here's what Jack Keane said about that threat. Cut 36.
I still think the Tomahawk missiles do make some sense. And also the Ukrainians have a long-range missile that they've developed called the Flamingo. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but they did it themselves in their own defense industrial base by a company named Firepoint. They're advertising it goes well over 1,000 miles. I don't know if that's valid or not. Sometimes manufacturers exaggerate their capabilities, but that is worth taking a hard look at and making certain it has the credibility. If it does, then it certainly is worth the investment in it by the United States and the Europeans. There's ways we can do that without punishing the American taxpayer to do it.
And the one thing the Ukrainians have proven to make the most of what we give them, and then they innovate from there to the point where we need their drone technology. We gave them drone technology. They made it all better. And I think they're going to have reports or they're going to have this missile shield, this drone shield up and running by late December, January. So can you imagine if they could find a way to stop the Russians from bombing kindergartens, which happened on Tuesday? Meanwhile, the president, as I mentioned, is focusing on this hemisphere. I think it is great. And he says they're going to get more and more serious, especially as it relates to Venezuela. He says, no problem. I will definitely be brief Congress. But listen to where he thinks it's going. Cut to.
So now they're coming in by land. And even the land is concerned because I told them that's going to be next. You know, the land is going to be next. And we may go to the Senate. We may go to the, you know, Congress and tell them about it. But I can't imagine they'd have any problem with it. I think, in fact, while we're here, I think it's a good idea, Pete. You go to Congress, you tell them about it. What are they going to do? Say, gee, we don't want to stop drugs pouring in.
You know what they're going to say? They're going to say, we don't believe you. I want more proof. But you can't get proof. I mean, did I get proof that Alawaki was going to be droned? I think it was in Yemen or Somalia. Do you get proof as Barack Obama was blowing up these people all across the country? I personally loved it because he was able to listen to his intel agencies and take drone strikes against them and blow them up and kill them. Did we read the Miranda rights to Soleimani over in Iraq when he landed there? Pretty sure we didn't. I'm not sure who else is in the car, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty clear that they're dead. So now all of a sudden, when it's President Trump, they all of a sudden say, well, what about the Miranda rights? You know, we don't even know who these people are. Well, intelligence does. CIA is working in there. We're able to surveil them for miles. And then if you look at logic, why would they be going in a speedboat with this type of cargo that fast and then claim they're fishermen? Pretty sure that's not how fishermen act. That's what's going on locally. But yesterday, I was just stunned to see that the big betting scandal that was unveiled. What happened? 30-plus were arrested, including three basketball players, including the coach of the Trailblazers. These sophisticated card games, flat-out cheating, millions lost. They're in bed with four mafia crime families. The only one not not involved with the Columbia crime family. They were not involved, but the other four major families were involved. So what were they doing and how were they working with some of these basketball players to get inside information, perhaps? And when it comes to card games, to cheat, to lure people in, wow, I get to play with Chauncey Billups. I think I'm going to play. And it turns out Chauncey Billups might be an amateur player, but when he gets inside information or the people he's playing with are getting inside information, you're going to lose to them. And when you lose to them, you're going to lose a lot of money. And because after a while, people started getting suspicious. And when they started getting suspicious, they started going to the cops. And then they went to the FBI. Here is Kash Patel about what led them to this big sting and what else they expect to happen. Cut 7.
These individuals got in bed with La Casa Nostra and four of the five major crime families in New York City to create gambling empires, to rob people of their money, to extort people, to commit acts of wire fraud, to rig games and poker games and basketball games just so they could make a few extra bucks. And then they had the protection of the mafia in New York around this country so that they could continue the scheme to fleece innocent victims of tens of millions of dollars.
So that's just the beginning. He went on. Cut 8.
They literally had scanners at the poker tables where they literally had professional athletes in the NBA walk off the court so their proposition bets could be met. Is a coordinated scheme with La Casa Nostra and the individuals that we arrested today. And it's been going on for some time. And we are going to continue to work this investigation and those that have been arrested today to make sure that illegal gambling empires embedded with the La Casa Nostra are brought down, whether they're in the NBA or anywhere else.
So now we're getting more and more details. And the commissioner, I'm going to play this a little bit later, but you heard some of it up top. Adam Silver talked about it on the Pat McAfee show. And I think that he worries that more people are involved. But when you look at the betting, I could see how much fun betting would be. You could do some research. It's, you know, when you do the random things at casinos, I'm not, you know, that's just literally random, no skill. But when you go in and you can research and you get some people that you know and you go and put money at the game, you're sure the Jets are going to lose, you're positive the Cowboys are going to win, you think the point spreads make sense, that's fine. But when you want a certain wide receiver to have a certain amount of catches, when you see a certain point guard can only get so many points and assists, and you can do these prop bets, that's when things get dicey. And even the commissioner said that. Now, in terms of Chauncey Billups, the Hall of Fame player, MVP of the finals, of when he was with Detroit when they won it all, now looked at as a real good coach in Portland, they say he's right in the middle of this. He was arrested yesterday and let out on his own recognizance. Matt Berkley, a professional poker player, on a podcast said this in 2023 about Billups. Cut 10.
This must have been like 5 years ago, 2019-ish, I think, 4 years ago, where there was this game. It started in L.A., and then it came to Vegas for a few days, and it was all built around Chauncey Billups. And I had heard about the game. And the person who told me about it was like, look, I know the game runners. I'm telling you 100% this game is on the up and up. And I was like, well, I know a lot of the people that are involved, and I'm telling you 100% that it is not on the up and up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of went back and forth, and I agreed that, like, I just wasn't going to go play it. But I had some friends who went and played it both in L.A. and in Vegas. And it obviously, like, was for sure confirmed to be cheated. Mm-hmm. Like, people who clearly didn't even understand the rules of No Limit Hold'em are just, like, jamming hundreds of big blinds in with, like, a gutty and then just drilling it. Yeah. Only the pros are losing.
So, obviously, these guys are gamblers. I'm not. Maybe you guys are. I figured out what they mean by that. My gut instinct says I'm going to do this as opposed to going with the percentages. And your gut instinct is not your gut instinct. You have an X-ray table, and you got a card shuffler that's all fixed. So I was amazed by all this. My jaw was on the ground. But I am not surprised that there's a betting scandal in sports. This is a scandal waiting to happen. Referees, too. I mean, my goodness. Do you really think it's three guys in the NBA? That's it? When we come back, I'll take some calls on this, 1-866-408-7669. And there is some other things I want to go over, and that is including the shutdown, what's it going to take to bring everyone back to work, and also targeting ICE. I'm talking about ICE, an American law enforcement branch that's going to be targeted by local cops because politicians want them to. It's unconstitutional. I don't see cops doing this. But it's all going to lead to a major clash. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I will say the mafia must really be hurting if the biggest NBA name they can get is Chauncey Billups. They couldn't get Shaq. He'll take money for anything. Either way, the NBA understands this scandal has really tarnished their integrity. That's why the league is making it up to fans by offering them a $50 free play on a FanDuel using the promo code Jailblazer. I'm going to make it, baby. Come on. This is the one. This is the one.
So the guests having fun on late night shows. I think this, like the Louvre robbery, people are just able to sit back and go, yeah, it's a crime, but who really got hurt? And it's just other people involved, an underworld we're not involved with. But we're fascinated by how it went down. And all everyone's thinking is, now we know the next movie that's going to be out. So it's going to be, if you do a documentary on this, from what we know so far, it'll be huge and probably have Pacino and De Niro in it for sure. But here's Adam Silver on what he thinks the problem is. Cut nine.
We've asked some of our partners to pull back some of the prop bets, especially when they're on two-way players, guys who don't have the same stake in the competition, where, you know, it's too easy to manipulate something which seems otherwise small and inconsequential to the overall score. Maybe we're trying to put in place and learning as we go, and working with the betting companies, some additional controls to prevent sort of some of that manipulation.
Yeah, and by the way, that was from Tuesday before everything went down on Thursday. So that was, I'm sure he's gotten a heads up on what's going on. Keep in mind, too, one of these guys, Terry Rozier, has been looked at since 2023. And his great attorney, James Trustee, a great friend of our show, came out. And I know, look, you're a defense attorney. You're there to make sure your guy gets off. Understood. And one of his clients was Donald Trump. But Jim Trustee said, we've been cooperating with the investigators. We don't understand why they made the arrest. In that morning in Orlando, he came in shorts, and he and Chauncey Billups were arrested, arraigned, and let go. So he'll be part of it. So I'm a little confused by it. He also says that Rozier doesn't gamble. But was he giving inside information to other gamblers, number one? Number two, is other people benefiting from it, maybe in his world that didn't have much money? Is that okay? The guy Damon Jones evidently would call up LeBron James and find out, for example, if LeBron James was playing or not. And he's okay, yeah, you're not going to play today? And of course, tell his friends, LeBron James is not going to play. So whether it's on the Cavaliers or the Lakers, he is not playing. That other team has a great chance of winning. Best player in basketball, right? And he takes days off just because he wanted to rest, because at 40-something years old, you get tired and you want to be ready for the playoffs. So that's been – are you going to tell me this is not happening in every sport? I'm telling you, especially – look, for example, in football. You get one check and you're on the edge of making the roster every week. you all of a sudden feel as though you could make some money by finding out who's going to be starting at quarterback after an injury. You're going to find out what some plays are, if a team's favored to win, provide inside information, and then you can stand to benefit. Well, someone else puts the money up and takes the bet in your place. Easy to figure out. Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this, the U.S. News and World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm from the hood, okay? So when a bully comes, like, if there are no rules, you literally have to figure it out. So Donald Trump has changed things, and people trying to do what's always been done is not going to work. So if you hit me in my face, I'm not going to punch you back in your face. I'm going to go across your neck.
So how unbelievably irresponsible is that comment? It's all part of the new political vernacular. It's okay to threaten people's lives, call them Nazis, and in this case, slit their neck, I guess mob style, terrorist style. Carmen Maria Montiel is one of the people running against her. She's a businesswoman former journalist, and one of 16 candidates vying to represent Houston's 18th district after the death of Sylvester Turner. So there's a special election coming up November 4th. Everyone goes in. If somebody gets over 50%, they go forward. If they don't, the top two go to a special runoff. Carmen, welcome back. What's your thoughts about that statement?
Thank you, Brian. Well, you know, this is what I have to put up every day. We've been in forums, and it seems I'm the top Republican in this race. I'm at the top four. I have to see these top three other Democrats, and there is another one that sometimes join us because sometimes it's top four, top six. And this is the rhetoric every day, attacking the Republicans, insulting the Republicans, threatening the Republicans to the point that every time I go to a forum, I go afraid, scared when I go in, while I'm there, and when I leave. And they mention President Trump so often, all of them, that you would think they're running for president. While they have no platform, no plan for their constituents, you know, and that's the problem with the Democrats. They have no platform. The platform is to hate Trump and to hate Republicans. But if they have to say one thing they're going to do for their constituents, they cannot come up with one.
Well, a couple of things. In that area, you would be replacing a Democrat. So, and Houston is known to lean left, even though they seem to have a common sense mayor that does not want to fight with the president, nor does the mayor of San Francisco want to kind of work with him. How would you characterize the 18th district in Texas?
Well, the 18th district, the people are tired. The people are tired of 30 years of do nothing, of 30 years of negligence, that in the meantime, Houston have become the poorest city in the nation. We just became the city with the poorest number of people. What does that tell you? You know, we've been under Democratic control for over 30 years. In the meantime, we became poorest. Our streets are full of holes. Whenever it rains, we get flooded. Yep. You know, my slogan is, Houston, we have a problem, because nothing gets solved and it gets worse. In my group of opponents, they all have held public office or are holding public office. They're asking to be promoted to Congress. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to do something, which is actually fight Trump. But they have done nothing for the people. We have a cancer cluster in the area that is killing the good people of Houston.
So what's your background, Carmen?
I'm a former journalist, a commercial real estate broker. I work in the medical field for 20 years. I was born and raised in Venezuela. I came here as a student, was not able to get back to Venezuela because the situation went down. And years ago, I started noticing how many things were happening in the United States that were so similar to what took Venezuela to what we are today, that that's when I decided to get involved in politics.
Give me an example. Well, how does this remind you? Because Hugo Chavez takes over, goes socialist. He wants to make Venezuela Cuba. He dies of brain cancer. Maduro, a bus driver, takes over, and he's just ruined this economy, ignored 2 election losses. So how does this remind you of that?
Well, the rhetoric of Hugo Chavez was very abrasive towards the people. It was very separative. But people need to understand that Hugo Chavez, by the time we got to Hugo Chavez, there was 50, 60 years that took us there, which is happening in the United States. The open borders in Venezuela happened in the early 70s. You know, and before Hugo Chavez, we have what we thought was a bipartisan democracy of two parties that were both socialists, implementing socialist ideas and socialist programs. So I always said that those 40 years of so-called bipartisan democracy under the two socialists, they were the parents of Hugo Chavez.
So and this you'll find out in a couple of weeks. If you're in the final two, and then if you're in the final two, there'll be a runoff. When would the runoff be?
On November 4th, we find out the results, and the runoff will be by the end of January. It's what they're talking about.
Do you have early voting?
We started on Monday,
so
this week.
Yeah, so people are voting, and you're getting the word out now. And we have a great station there, KHOU. So hopefully people are listening and they can see what you bring to the table. How do you, is there anything you look at what the Trump administration has done? What are the policies that have surprised you? And what are the ones that you can't get behind? Is there anything the president has done, especially his action in Central and South America, that you feel as though you couldn't back?
Absolutely everything. You know, one of the things is so important, this seat, it has become a battleground seat, is because if I secure this seat, President Trump's agenda will advance. But if we lose this seat, we will be in gridlock. And especially what President Trump is doing in South America and in Venezuela, he understands that Venezuela needs to be freed from this criminal communist regime because it's affecting the region. And not only the region, it presents a threat for the United States of America. And the only reason why the big, beautiful bill passed is because this seat was vacant. If this seat had not been vacant, it would be a tie. As you know, it only passed by one vote. So this seat is very important in order to advance President Trump's agenda.
Yeah, which is interesting, too, because the president of the United States feels as though no one's even seen the big, beautiful bill. And now because it's about to be implemented, we're in a total shutdown, lockdown. Do you know people that have been personally affected by this?
Well, it's a fear mongering that the Democrats are putting to the people. I don't know anybody yet that have been affected, but they're selling to the people that they're going to take away their Medicare, they're going to take away their Medicaid, they're going to take away their food stamps, SNAP. And we all know that these cuts are to address the illegal immigrants that are getting benefit from it and many people that are getting benefit for it. There has been a lot of fraud in Medicare, Medicaid, and also food stamps is not, and the program SNAP. And we need to cut that. We can kidnap spending and people stealing from us and thinking that it's okay because the Democrats want to keep the rhetoric. But the reality is a lot of people are buying the fear they're selling to them, and that needs to stop. And as the next Congresswoman of the District 18, I'm planning to have town halls every month to explain to our people exactly what's happening and the truth of what our government is doing for them.
All right, Carmen Maria Montiel, best of luck in the runoff. Where people want to support your candidacy, where do they go?
They can go to carmen4congress.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Carmen. Appreciate it. All right.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll be able to squeeze in some calls and some emails, briankilmeade.com. Before we go, just a note, coming up in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, if in the vicinity, it's going to be streamed on Fox Nation November 1st, 5 p.m. Go to briankilmeade.com. History, liberty, and laughs. We bring history to life in a fun, informative, amusing, entertaining way. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He's found time to demolish the east wing of the White House so that he can build a ballroom where he can be celebrated as if he was a king.
People's House is basically being sold to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
It is corruption at its core.
So this is how the man is treating the legacy, the physical legacy of the presidency of the United States. Donald Trump is literally destroying the People's House.
So a couple of things. What he's trying to do is he's took down the East Wing and he's going to rebuild a ballroom. It's going to cost $300 million and it's going to be done by 2029. Hakeem Jeffries is just a boring detractor. He doesn't say anything ever interesting or innovative. Everything is condemning. And now with $300 million that came from the private sector, and he says, the president said, whatever money we're short for, but we got enough, I'll pay. They took down the East Wing, which was basically empty, and they're putting in a new ballroom. But instead of doing, I don't know, I didn't look up, I didn't go on the microfilm and find out, did Teddy Roosevelt have any detractors when in 1902 he built the West Wing, moved his office out of and into the West Wing, out of the second floor because he had six kids, and he said, I really had nowhere to work and they had nowhere to stay. So when they put the Oval Office in, later on, Taft did it and made that the new office, did people complain? 1942, they actually added the East Wing, did FDR. And he basically built a bunker for himself because of the middle of World War II. Massive construction done when Truman takes over. The whole place was falling apart. You got to see these pictures. They gutted the whole thing down to the studs and rebuilt it. They almost fell through in retrospect when they started examining it. Truman's family almost fell through the top floor. That's how bad it was and how much noise it made. And then Truman, who got to the White House, he also put the bowling alley in, and then he put in the balcony. And he took it out, not from Congress, from the money he gets to keep the upbringing of the house. And he said, I'm just going to use that. People were upset by that. Can you imagine the White House without the Truman balcony? Well, I couldn't. So FDR, TR, you have Taft, and then you have Gerald Ford installed an outdoor swimming pool. I actually have never seen that. I don't know if it's gone. And then in 2009, Barack Obama put in a tennis court. This is the best builder, best businessman that's ever been to the White House. So why would he not build? All the things he thought about the first 4 years, he's doing this 4 years. And people just can't get over it. I mean, they're just outraged by it. I think they're upset that he's making more of an imprint and they can't take it down. You might say, well, I'll take down his picture. I won't put up his portrait. Go ahead. But you can't. You're not going to say you don't want a 650-seat ballroom, which the more you think about it, the more you hear about it. Anytime the presidents have had big addresses, they do it in tents outside. So sometime in the winter, you got to walk through all this. They make the makeshift paths. It ruins the whole lawn. He also, on the Rose Garden, set up a patio so he can do events outside. Sooner or later, it'll be too cold to be able to do that. But President of the United States could not, excuse me, his press secretary could not believe that every question that she's been asked is, even though we got the Russia sanctions, the China trip, the meeting on Thursday, the president deciding to make Central and South America America-friendly, the operations that are happening. Listen to the questions Caroline Levitt gets. Cut 27.
On the ballroom, first of which will probably be several questions about this today, I imagine.
Is it a big story?
It seems that way. Given the nature of all this, will the White House commit to releasing all of the donors and how much they're spending and how much of his own money the president is putting on the line to this?
Can the president tear down anything he wants without oversight? Can he demolish this building or, say, the Jefferson Memorial?
In addition to the ballroom and the Rose Garden patio, is the president looking at any other renovations or significant kind of projects here at the White House?
Is there, like, an official name? Like, are we calling it the Trump Ballroom, or does the president have a vision for what the name for the ballroom is going
to
be?
Back to the ballroom, I'm afraid. I just wanted to ask, because in July, the White House said that it would cost $200 million. Yesterday, the president said $300 million. Is $300 million now the operative figure, and why did it go up by so much?
All the questions. It was unbelievable. I think she was only up for a half hour yesterday because I was waiting to go on America Reports, and it was everything was delayed, but it wasn't that long. But after a while, I realized we're talking about a construction site. What people don't understand about what, I mean, most people do, but you have to have construction. A lot of times you have to have destruction. They're at the destruction point of taking it down, clearing it out, and then they'll start framing it out. You know, through the best they can with weather permitting, they'll try to do that through the winter. But it's not going to be done until 2029. So what is Hakeem Jeffries talking about? So he could have big parties over there and celebrate himself. He wouldn't even be able to enjoy it. He's trying to leave a legacy with a house that's brilliant, great history. I thought Josh Hawley had a great point yesterday. Now, all of a sudden, every Democrat's upset with the history. Is the president not understanding the history of that building? Really? I thought you condemned the building because it was predominantly built by slaves. I thought you were the party taking down almost every statue, from Jefferson out of City Hall in New York City, Columbus down to almost every statue, from Ohio to Portland, over to San Francisco. We have problems with Teddy Roosevelt taken out of the Museum of Natural History, put into North Dakota because he had an American Indian and a black man standing behind him because he was on a horse and he looked like he was superior. Nobody cared about history then. Now they care about history. Listen to Don Jr., cut 29.
They have nothing else to talk about anymore. They've lost the plot. They've stopped making any kind of sense. They've had to resort to violence because everything else they've tried to do is failing. The great irony of my father actually improving the White House, a construction guy, a guy that's known for building and building luxury, is actually improving the White House with private funding, his own and other donors. It's costing the taxpayer nothing. It's making the White House more usable. The White House is a beautiful place. It's an incredible building with incredible history, but it's actually very small.
Hey, and he goes on, and he joined us yesterday on Fox and Friends, but I mean, to tell you the truth, it's kind of easy. If you're Caroline Levitt, there's a lot of complicated questions you could be getting for people that want to pursue a story. But you have different people who just want to be outraged, from Whoopi Goldberg on down, to say he is ruining the people's house. Since when do you care about the people's house? Since when do you care about anything? Now, the ballroom, if it was submitted in plans, do you really want people's fingerprints on these plans? If it was had to get congressional approval for money, they would have had to do it, but they didn't. Lastly, when we talk about ICE, you talk about a group that's been totally targeted and vilified. There must be some internal poll that Democrats are running that says when they're tough on ICE and call them Nazis, their poll numbers go up. But I can't imagine anyone who has just a brain in their head who understands that when you vilify ICE, it's like vilifying the FBI, the state police, the local police, the Border Patrol. They are a branch of law enforcement. How dare you call them thugs and Gestapo? They're rounding up the illegal immigrants that are allowed to stream in here and litter the airports of Chicago and fill the shelters up in every major city because the President Biden pretended as he was sealing the border, he was actually letting everybody in. So Governor Pritzker sat down with Brett Baer yesterday, and he tried to justify his use of the word Nazi. And it's so ridiculous. You have to hear this. Cut 21.
What I can tell you is that Alberto Pinochet was an authoritarian. There are lots of authoritarians that I could point to. It happens that I know best because I helped build a Holocaust museum sitting next to Holocaust survivors about what the Nazis did in those early years.
No, I understand that.
I'm not talking about the Holocaust. I'm talking about what they were doing, taking away people's rights, arresting people, asking them for papers. Early on in an authoritarian regime, wherever it is in the world throughout history, this is what happens. It's the beginning of something very bad for our country, especially the constitutional republic.
He's such an idiot because he thinks that he sat next to Holocaust victims. You think it's okay to compare that to ICE agents and President Trump? Does a dictator allow the government to shut down? Does a dictator allow people to protest his existence in all those cities over the weekend? Does a dictator have to work the big, beautiful bill to the point that it almost didn't pass into the last week? Does a dictator have to spend millions of dollars to campaign for congressmen and senators? It's amazing that people want to have it both ways. Guy knows exactly what he wants. He knows how to get it done using the levers of government. That's not a dictatorship. That's a man who knows how to work the democracy. And he's changing things, no doubt about it. You just don't like what he's changing. And to vilify ICE because of that is sickening. And for Pritzker to sit there and think he did well yesterday, I think by talking, he killed himself.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Coming your direction at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're heard around the country, around the world. Everyone's focusing on this mayor's race in New York City, and I get it. We have a combination of powers, I guess old school Democrats. It looks like Eric Adams, the current governor, is going to team with the current mayor is going to team with the former governor, Cuomo, against Bomdami. Sliwa stays on his own. I don't know if it's going to affect the polls. It looked like Adams, when he dropped out, had to be done 9 and 11%. That could make a difference. Right now, it's roughly 52 to 28. But that's with small sample sizes. We have a lot going on this hour. We're going to be joined by Ian O'Connor in a matter of moments. Senator James Lankford at the bottom of the hour. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We're saying that if you're an ICE agent and you do these things, we think you ought to be held accountable. And yet no one in Washington, no one above them, no supervisor, no inspector general is holding anybody accountable.
Governor Pritzker, who knows nothing about law enforcement, feels perfectly capable and fine in condemning a branch of law enforcement as the Gestapo. Over the line, radical Dems make ICE the target. And they're pushing to have federal agents arrested by local cops. Do you believe this? Pam Bondi. And Pam Bondi is taking action.
Number two.
It's too easy to manipulate something which seems otherwise small and inconsequential to the overall score. We're trying to put in place and learning as we go some additional control to prevent sort of some of that manipulation.
Yeah, that is Adam Silver. That is a couple of days before the big scandal was unveiled at 10 a.m. on Thursday. He is commissioner of the NBA. Major gambling bust and could blow up the NBA. The feds arrested 30-plus, including three NBAers, in a massive gambling scam. This was a crime we all could see coming as soon as they legalized betting in a massive way in 39 states back in 2018. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
Well, I think it's high time we went after this thing that was polluting our population so much. So we're stopping the sea traffic, but we're also demonstrating to Maduro,
yes,
by this military presence, change your behavior.
Yes, that is General Jack Keane. President Trump makes it clear we own this hemisphere and cartels are this region's ISIS. Be a friend like El Salvador and Argentina and we'll aid you. Be an enemy and we'll take you down. In Brazil, Venezuela, Colombia, that's an example of that. Plus, Trump turns up the heat on Russia in a big way and is set to meet with China on Thursday, who is curtailing, they say, their purchases of oil from that renegade Russian regime. Let's bring in Ian O'Connor, one of this country's finest writers and authors. He's a columnist at The Athletic, six-time New York Times bestseller. And we talked to Ian to get a perspective on how big this betting scandal could be and is. Ian, your reaction to the presser yesterday and what has happened since?
Brian, I was there in 2007 at the press conference when David Stern was dealing with the Tim Donaghy scandal, the referee who bet on games. And I thought that was the end of the world. And I remember looking at David Stern, and he just had this appearance of a totally broken man. I didn't get a chance to see Adam Silver yesterday, to me, this is worse. For him to be, I would have liked to have seen his face as he watched that FBI press conference, Kash Patel, and rattling off these notorious crime families and their association with the NBA. And now this is as ugly and as bad as it gets. And I think it was predictable. I don't think this is the last scandal we'll see in professional sports by a long shot. And yeah, this was inevitable ever since the Supreme Court overturned the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992 back in 2018. And I do not think this is the end of this story.
So, Ian, with Adam Silver was saying on Tuesday, clearly he got tipped off that this was going on. And Brozier's been targeted since 2023. So he said he was been cooperating and was surprised to be arrested. So they've been doing this investigation. So he says, we got to limit the prop bets. You know, it's bad enough you got point spreads that people can mess it up with by hit a few air balls. Or the best player being out of a game, or whatever have you, where obviously a referee can have the biggest impact, perhaps. But the prop bets, oh, I think, you know, I'm, you know, you're a role player and you think you're going to play 15 minutes or score a certain amount. You have this guy, Rozier, who averaged 20 points a game, and then he predicted that he would go under, so they bet under on him in a meaningless game, Pelicans and Hornets, and suddenly people are cashing in on it. So if you eliminate prop bets, would that help anything?
Yes, it would definitely help, Brian, without question. I think the sports commissioners would love to see prop bets go away. But I have to say, beyond prop bets, it's when you look at some of the allegations in the indictments, and you're talking about a head coach in Chauncey Billups, who is alleged to have given information to bettors that was not available to the public about starters who were not going to play in a certain game. It doesn't really get much worse than that. And then you have Damon Jones, with connections to LeBron James, maybe the greatest player in the history of the league, or certainly one of the top two or three. And if I'm LeBron James, I am furious this morning that my name is associated with this case in any way. And my understanding is there's absolutely no evidence of him being involved in any wrongdoing, yet his name is linked to this case via Damon Jones. And so when you have a player or a former player and a volunteer assistant coach of the most glamorous franchise in professional sports in the Lakers giving information to bettors that an all-time great is not playing in a game, that information not available to the public at the time, that is really ugly stuff. And I think that, yeah, I don't know. Usually when I write a column about societal ills, Brian, I try to offer a solution. I don't know if there's a solution here. I think this genie with legalized sports betting is so far out of the bottle, there is no putting it back.
But look at the people advertising. And I'm not saying they're at fault, but Kevin Hart, Shaquille O'Neal, John Hamm, they're advertising for DraftKings and others to bet. And what are they saying on all the scoreboard shows? Hey, this is my pick of the week, and this is the spread, and I think they're going to go over, and I think they're going to go under. Now, you and I grew up with Jimmy the Greek, and we thought the odds, that was bending practicality when he was talking about the odds and betting, and he was known as a legendary bettor. But now it's part of everything. I mean, yesterday, ESPN didn't cover it on their normal channel, but they covered it on their betting show. They, to their credit, they did a real expose for about 20, 25 minutes on how this went down and what the ramifications were. But a lot of these outlets pay zillions of dollars for the rights to these leagues, and they're afraid of covering this story, aren't they?
Yeah, and listen, I have to say, Brian, my employer, The Athletic, has a deal with a gambling company, and obviously ESPN, you have ESPN Bet now, and all the leagues have all these agreements with gambling companies, with casinos. Teams have individual deals with casinos, and so there's that message that's being sent, which is in conflict with the message of betting on sports or our sport is bad. And I do think the vast majority of people who bet do it the right way. But you're always going to have people who break the law and do what is being alleged here. That kind of behavior is something that I don't think is going to disappear. Now, back in 2007 with the Donaghy case, I did think that would be a scared straight moment that changed things in sports. And guess what? It didn't. And I think this might act as a deterrent for a while. But 5, 6, 7 years down the road, I would be pretty surprised if there's not another gambling scandal to come in professional sports. I just think it's something you can't completely police and manage.
And we should tell people this. The card scandal involving Chauncey Billups, and he might be involved in the other one, sitting certain people at certain times. That's pretty amazing. These are some of the allegations. And then there's got the one with with giving inside information, or perhaps as a player, you know, the faking an ankle injury, and people bet the under on how much you're going to score, and then they sit out and people cash in. But Cash Patel talked about how big this got and how serious it got. Cut eight.
They literally had scanners at the poker tables where they literally had professional athletes in the NBA walk off the court so their proposition bets could be met. Is a coordinated scheme with La Casa Nostra and the individuals that we arrested today. And it's been going on for some time. And we are going to continue to work this investigation and those that have been arrested today to make sure that illegal gambling empires embedded with the La Casa Nostra are brought down, whether they're in the NBA or anywhere else.
You got four mob families. I mean, four mob families. Number one, still out there. You know, no longer in the Godfather sequels, but they're still out there thriving and all over this.
The only crime family not mentioned was the Soprano crime family.
Yes.
And it was jarring, really, to listen to that, to watch it. And again, if you're Adam Silver and you hear those names associated with your product, what are you thinking? And this is as bad as it gets. And I do think it's worse than the Donaghy case back in 2007, without question. And I don't know. I look at you mentioned Terry Rozier. It's easier for a fringe player, say a Jonte Porter, maybe to although he was eventually
from the Raptors
prosecuted in that case. Yeah. And so, but he was a fringe NBA player. Terry Rozier has been a very good player in the NBA who's averaged 20.45 seasons. And so it's not just the player who's occasionally in the NBA, also in the G League, going back and forth on a two-way contract. These are serious allegations against a real player in the NBA. And, I think it is beyond alarming.
So do you think it could grow? Do you think we could have names added to this?
I do. I hate to say that. I think when you have, 34 people arrested, you're going to get different degrees of cooperation in this case as it goes forward, and I frankly am not going to be shocked by too much in sports anymore, having covered it for 40 years. But I, at this point, would be shocked if this doesn't grow. I think that I don't know if it's the tip of the iceberg. I don't think it's the full iceberg. I would say it might be half the iceberg, and so I would expect more developments to come.
So the whole thing is, too, with the card game and Chauncey Billups, this was picked out by a guy named Matt Berkley. I don't know the professional poker player world. I see it all over ESPN and Fox and it, whatever. You know, for some people, everyone thinks that's a sport. But listen to what he said on a podcast a couple of years ago about Chauncey Billups. Cut 10.
This must have been 5 years ago, 2019-ish, I think, 4 years ago. Where there was this game, it started in LA and then it came to Vegas for a few days, and it was all built around Chauncey Billups. And I had heard about the game, and the person who told me about it was like, "Look, I know the game runners. I'm telling you 100% this game is on the up and up." And I was like, "Well, I know a lot of the people that are involved, and I'm telling you 100% that it is not on the up and up."
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of went back and forth, and I agreed that, I just wasn't going to go play it. But I had some friends who went and played it both in L.A. and in Vegas. And it obviously, was for sure confirmed to be cheated. Mm-hmm. People who clearly didn't even understand the rules of No Limit Hold'em are just, jamming hundreds of big blinds in with, a gutty. And then drilling it.
Yeah. Dude, guys were losing.
Only the pros are losing.
Yeah, the pros were losing millions to guys that were novices, and Billups was at the game. So this is unbelievable that he would waste his time like this. As a Hall of Fame player, made hundreds, tens of millions of dollars as a player, and now making it as a coach.
Yeah, I do think, Brian, that the NBA is a lot less concerned about those illegal poker games that were rigged by mobsters, as bad as that sounds.
Because then you could get extorted, you know. So
that's true, without question. But I think the insider information that's being traded for the sake of illegal sports betting, that is a bigger deal to the NBA right now. And I think one question that needs to be asked of Adam Silver is, what happened to your investigation of Terry Rozier? The NBA found no wrongdoing. And then here we have what happened yesterday. Why did you find no wrongdoing with Rozier's behavior? And why, by the way, after that game in 2023, was he inactive for the next 7, 8, 9 games? So Adam Silver has a lot of questions, a lot of very difficult questions to answer here. To me, starting with that Rozier investigation by the league and why it turned up no wrongdoing.
Could one of the things I'm saying, well, the FBI was investigating, so we want to let them do their job. Is that a good excuse?
No. And in fairness, the FBI does have more investigative powers than the NBA. But again, the league found no wrongdoing. And the sportsbook apparently flagged that March 2023 game in question right away. So it just seemed to me that it was fairly obvious, looking at the evidence we're seeing that was presented yesterday in the press conference, that something went on there that needed further investigation. The NBA did that investigation and came up empty. Why did you come up empty? Did you want to come up empty? And so I think that those are very difficult questions that Silver will have to face.
And the thing is about the integrity of the game. That's what they always told us about the Pete Rose scandal. If people don't believe the game's on the up and up, the whole game falls apart. That was the White Sox scandal, the Black Sox scandal. And now we have a situation where Pete Rose in his last days is like, wait a second, now everybody's betting. Now people are advertising that they're betting. Remember, at one point, Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays were banned from baseball because they agreed to be greeters at a casino. That's how much things, and they were afraid to put any franchise in Las Vegas. Now they're going to have baseball, and they have football, and I'm sure they're going to get basketball. They have hockey.
That's right. Things were different back then. I remember when my father used to bring home from work betting slips from some bookie somewhere, and it was I was a kid. I might have been 8 years old, putting down $3 to try to win $20 on Monday Night Football. That was the extent of my gambling experience outside of an NCAA tournament pool or a Super Bowl pool. And this is why I stay away from it. I have absolutely no interest in gambling and getting involved with any of these online sites. And I think I know from my son, I don't know about yours, Brian, but Kyle has told me about his friends who are constantly on their phones placing bets. And so it is so ingrained in American culture right now. I really don't know what the solution is. You're not going to see a prohibition of gambling at any point. And so I just think the leagues have to do a better job monitoring this. And that's why I bring up the NBA's investigation of Rozier and the question of why nothing was found there.
And you got Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, everybody weighing in, just ripping these players for what they did. And by the way, just to be clear on the record, Ian O'Connor, son Kyle, and my son were roommates in college. I went to the Falk School in Syracuse. So they were big-time sports fans. And I asked Brian the same thing. I go, Brian, betting? He goes, everybody, all the time, on everything. And then I asked everybody here in their 20s and 30s especially, they go, everybody bets. So it is now part of America's culture, for better or for worse. I knew it was going to be a problem, but it's impossible to put it back, the genie back in the bottle. Ian, thanks so much. I know you'll be writing columns on this.
My pleasure, as always, Brian. You're the best. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And that's, he writes for The Athletic. Fantastic writer. Just did Aaron Rodgers, did Belichick. You would never regret reading any of his books. Don't move.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hope is back.
He shoots.
Our time has come. Paid for by Zoran for NYC.
A little bit of a problem with that. The Knicks were not aware that they were being used in a Zoran ad, and they didn't like it, and they have a cease and desist on that spot. They attached a screenshot of the logo from him and from the Knicks, and that's not okay. This comes with his new campaign. He's trying to relate himself to basketball. The guy is a non-athlete. By the way, it was Eric Adams who goes to the games, and Cuomo was at the game. I don't see Cuomo at many Knick games, but he's like a celebrity. He hangs out with all of them. But Mamdani is not a mainstream guy. And if I'm the Knicks, I'm offended by that. But, you know, the Knicks can't be a part of any politics at all. I don't care if you're the most conservative, the most liberal guy. It doesn't make any sense to do that. So he's got to cease and desist. But damage is done. People have saw it and associated with so many Knicks fans who are so under the belief that they're going to the finals this year, and Mamdani wants to put himself with that success story. Nice try. We'll give you the latest on the polls and so much more. Brian Kilmeade Show.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, Senator James Lankford's in studio. Senator, I was just saying the last time we were in studio together on radio, I was in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I was here.
Yeah, yeah. And now you came in. You came here, and I wasn't here, but now I appreciate you stopping by. What brings you to New York?
Yeah, I've got several meetings that are here. It's literally a quick in and out, but I want to be able to stop by the studio and just say hello while I was in town.
Honored.
I'll be back in Oklahoma tonight.
So much to go through. First off, I've been saying that even over on WABC in New York, it's a national story, what's happening in New York City. Are people of Oklahoma focusing on what could be happening here with a true extremist, inexperienced 33-year-old with a 15-point lead in the mayor's race?
Oh, yeah. People in Oklahoma are noticing it, and they're just scratching their head thinking, what in the world that one of the greatest cities in the world in New York City is now going to elect a socialist, just a hardcore leftist anti-Semitic socialist.
And does that, how do you interpret that? I mean, does this worry you? Because a lot of Republican political experts and insiders and operatives say, great for us because we're able to run against this. But your thought.
I get it. I don't like that. I understand the politics of it to say great for us because we're going to be able to really show what the Democrat Party really is this hardcore leftist socialist anti-Israel party. But quite frankly, for the people of the United States, the whole country turns and looks at the mayor of New York. And that's still a symbol of the entire country to the rest of the world. And it hurts us on the world stage. And we don't want anyone to suffer. I would tell you, if I was the people of Florida, I'd be preparing more real estate to sell because there are more folks are going to move out of New York straight back to Florida. You're welcome to come to Oklahoma as well. If you're a conservative living in New York City, we love conservatives moving into our state.
Right. There's so many different topics. Number one, you and I are on the same page in Ukraine. They're the good guys in this, and they need to be backed. I give the president great credit for saying, I'm going to try everything possible to end this diplomatically and not just go all in what Joe Biden was doing. But I get the sense, and I know he just met with you guys last week and had a big – was it this week with the luncheon?
It was the luncheon this
week. We had luncheon this week. But it seems like he is fed up with Vladimir Putin. How significant are the sanctions that he put on those two oil and gas companies?
Oh, it's extremely significant. In fact, I even had Washington, D.C. press that caught me this week after the president put the sanctions on the Russian oil and gas companies and said, okay, that's a really big deal. And it is a big deal because that will hurt the Russian economy significantly. That will change the flow of oil globally. It is a very big deal to be able to say if these two Russian oil companies cannot – trade on the dollar, they can't actually put their boats out on the water to be able to be insured. We're going to make sure that we're going to go after those folks.
How much do you believe that Russia, that China, what they said yesterday or the day before, that they're going to level off their purchases of oil? And do you believe India will do the same, which they've said?
Well, the president's saying that India is saying that over and over again.
But India, I haven't heard from India.
India hasn't done that yet, but the president keeps saying it's coming. If China does that, if India does that, and if these two oil companies can't put their oil on the world market, that makes a very big difference. I also met with some European leaders on Wednesday and talked specifically to them about what about countries like Spain that are still buying natural gas from Russia. They got to stop doing that. They're in Europe. They got to stop doing this.
Spain's the worst.
Well,
I mean, come on.
Spain has they have a terrible agreement. They're in NATO, but they have a terrible commitment to actually maintaining
their left-wing government.
Well, they're not maintaining their military that they need to. They're kind of assuming, okay, it's way over there. It's far away from me, so I don't have to do this. We've got to make them step up, and the president's put a lot of pressure on them, and they're still buying Russian natural gas.
So here is General Jack Keane. He was on with me on Fox and Friends, and I asked him about the Tomahawk situation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem as though it takes 6 months to train. Cut 36. Moon.
I still think the Tomahawk missiles do make some sense. And also, the Ukrainians have a long-range missile that they've developed called the Flamingo. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but they did it themselves in their own defense industrial base by a company named Firepoint. They're advertising it goes well over 1,000 miles. I don't know if that's valid or not. Sometimes manufacturers exaggerate their capabilities. But that is worth taking a hard look at and making certain it has the credibility. If it does, then it certainly is worth the investment in it by the United States and the Europeans. There's ways we can do that without punishing the American taxpayer to do it.
Senator, what could you tell us about the Flamingo? I was not familiar with that, but if it can go 1,000 miles, that's significant.
That's a long way. So the Tomahawk's 1,500 miles, so it has a much longer reach. I would tell you, I personally met with the Ukrainian group that came in to be able to train on the Patriot missile battery. When Joe Biden was wavering, what are we going to do on this? When they brought him in to be able to do that, the Patriot training is actually in my state in Oklahoma. Lawton Fort Sill. And so I went down to be able to see the training, see how it was going, met with some of the Ukrainians there. I talked to some of the Americans that are training them, and they said, we expected this to take months and months to train them. They have picked up on this very quickly. We're getting them out of here several months early because they know how to do it. They're learning how to maintain it. They're learning how to turn it around. So the Ukrainian troops are well-trained, well-equipped. They fought against the Russians for multiple years. They know their stuff on it. So to say it's going to take a long time to be able to learn a system, I would tell you it didn't for the Patriot system, and it's a much more complicated
system.
As
usual, Russia wants to back off, and Vladimir Putin says, if a strike is made on the Russian territory with such a weapon, the response will be very serious, if not staggering. Let them think about that. That's a constant threat they've been saying for the last few years.
It is a constant threat because they understand this is something that could actually do damage to the Russian economy. We're talking about actually reaching in and having long range to be able to reach into Russian refineries, to their oil processing areas, to their shipment areas. There's already been a significant decline for what Russia can actually produce right now, about 25%. It's driving the cost up dramatically in Russia. They're literally having to export their oil, have somebody else refine it, and send it back to them. So the Ukrainians are doing real damage with the weapon systems they have now.
I'm pretty amazed. For the first time in my lifetime, we have a president that's focused on Central and South America in our hemisphere.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably popular with Republicans. I saw 78% of Republicans are for this, 82% of MAGA Republicans are for this. So the president's making it clear. Venezuela has got to, the Maduro's got to go.
Yep.
The Colombia president, we're rattling his cage big time while helping out Argentina and also aiding El Salvador, saying, look, you could run the government the way you want. If you're a friend of ours, we got your back. In Panama, they said, all right, we're out of the Belt and Road program.
Yep.
Did you know about this strategy? Because the president didn't talk about it a lot before we got the job again.
He didn't talk about it a lot. He did talk about Panama a lot, saying we need the Chinese not to be able to run the Panama Canal. We need to make sure there's a free flow of goods around the world, and that's an open canal on it. He talked about that a lot during the campaign and then immediately implemented, literally within hours. As you remember, Marco Rubio, his first international trip was to Panama, and then he traveled through all of that region. So he kind of set the stage for this at the very beginning. Venezuela, Colombia are feeling the pressure to be able to understand you can't sell drugs into us. Mexico, he continues to be able to engage, so you cannot ship drugs into us. The cartels are terrorist organizations. They're killing American people. The Argentina, trying to be able to stabilize their economy, it is good for us to have good trading partners around the world. The one thing I'd say about Argentina, Brian,
right,
American beef is so much better than Argentine beef. This whole back and forth about getting more Argentine beef into us, I'm telling you, there's no comparison between the quality of American beef and Argentinian beef. So I want to see American ranchers actually raise the beef for what we already buy some Argentinian ground beef that comes into our system, but there's nothing like an American steak.
Well, I agree with you, but the ranchers are now mad at the president. They say the tariffs are not helping them. They're hurting them. And the president says, you guys don't fully understand what I'm doing. Are we giving a good deal to Argentina?
So we are giving a good deal to Argentina. There are elections next week, and I think the president wants to make sure that the people of Argentina know the Americans have their back, and we want to see a free nation there, not a socialist nation that's in Argentina. What the president has done for American beef, he opened up the Australian market, he opened up the Japanese market. He's providing more opportunities for us to be able to get our American beef into more places around the world that want it. But you're right. I would tell you Oklahoma ranchers are pretty ticked off about more Argentine beef coming into our market because they're actually just making it. They're doing well right now, but they are just making it. And they're one of the few folks in the farm and ranch economy that are making it.
So right now in farming, they're really upset that the Chinese are not buying the soybeans.
Right. And sorghum.
And the president hopes to walk out, I guess, of his meeting on Thursday with them buying it. Well, it's not a favor. We have better stuff, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
But they know it hurts us to do it, and President Xi thinks farmers are President Trump's base, so he wants to hurt him. And we could write a check, and that stuff could go rot and fall, barns. But we'd much rather sell.
Yeah, the farmers don't raise it to be able to rot on the ground. They don't want a subsidy. They want their product to be able to go into families and taking care of people around the world on it. The Chinese also, under the first Trump administration, agreed to buy a lot of soybeans on it. And then Joe Biden just ignored that agreement. The Chinese stopped buying them, and Joe Biden just looked away on it. And a lot of farmers are like, what in the world just happened? Because we were selling all these soybeans, and now China's just turned it off on it. So I think one of the big issues the president's going to raise this next Thursday with President Xi of China is you need to keep your deal that we made in the first administration. You're going to buy more soybeans.
Couple of things. Do you agree that we need a warp speed or Manhattan-like project when it comes to rare earth? And do you think there's a plan in place to do it? I was talking to Doug Burgum last week, and he thinks we could do it if we focus on it within 18 months. What do you hear?
Yeah, there is a plan that's working on it. Literally, the White House is meeting on this every week to be able to go through and focus in on what
mine and refine.
Correct. Mine, refine, process. That's the other one as well. We got to be able to actually get it. The processing is the part that's the dirtiest part of all of it. We have all these rare earths and critical minerals in the United States. We have lots of lithium. We've got lots of these metals that are out there that everyone can't pronounce. They're all over the United States in different places, Idaho, Nevada, North Carolina. We've got some in Oklahoma and Arkansas. So they're all over the place. But right now our environmental regulations won't let us go get them and won't let us process them, or it becomes so incredibly expensive, we just outsource it. Well, I hope we're learning the lesson. We've got to be able to do that here. We can't allow the Chinese to be able to say, you can't have these rare earth minerals. We can't do basic Ford F-150 production without a lot of these. You can't do our national defense. There's lots of things that we cannot do without some of these basic critical minerals.
So hopefully, also we have allies in Africa. We have allies in Argentina that have rare earth that Chinese
Australia. Australia has a lot of rare earth minerals, and they're doing more and more processing there.
So how do you loosen up these environmental regulations? You have Lee Zeldin, who's an ally, but he can't unilaterally just eliminate them. A lot of them belong. A lot of those laws belong to the states, right?
Right. So a couple of things we got to do. We got to start more mining here, and we're going to start processing in other countries while we can at this point through allies that we know are going to be reliable. We need to buy more from Australia and other nations that will sell to us. There's several that are in our Western Hemisphere as well, and the president continues to be able to say, I'm focused on Western Hemisphere, and one of the reasons is a lot of these nations also do processing in rare earth minerals that are there as well. And then we got to work through the law change to be able to make sure we can do the processing here in the United States. Brian, there's lots of places that are called brownfield sites where there's old environmental waste that's there from years and years and years ago. They've done a lot of cleanup on. No one lives around them because they're old brownfield sites. Those are perfect sites to be able to actually put in some of the processing for these rare earth minerals.
It's very logical for government to pull that off. Would be a little bit tougher. Lastly, let's talk about the shutdown.
Yeah.
In reading almost all accounts, there just can't be any give for Republicans because of the precedence it sets. This is Joe Biden's budget limits.
Yeah.
This is Joe Biden's budget, a continuing resolution because the appropriations bills weren't done on time. And they say, well, you got to restore aid to USAID, and then you got to restore aid to PBS and NPR, and then you got to address health care, provide the subsidies on the pandemic level to continue to subsidize Obamacare.
Yep.
And there's just no give on the right.
Yeah, no, it's
and
crazy.
I don't think there should be.
No, there shouldn't be on that. And I would say
By the way, I would say that if it was the left. No. I would say, guys, this is the wrong time to shut down.
Yep, don't do it. So I go back to 2013. In 2013, Republicans shut down the government for a couple of weeks.
Ted Cruz's idea.
It was the Ted Cruz focus on, we got to get rid of Obamacare. Democrats at that time said, we are not going to discuss health care while the government's closed down. We're not going to do it. You know what? 2 weeks later, we reopened the government. And then there was a long conversation. There's been a lot of changes in Obamacare since then that we've been able to get done to make changes on. There's a lot more still to go on it, but we've made a lot of changes since then. But they said, we're not negotiating health care while the government's closed. Well, guess what? Now, shoes on the other foot at this point. The Democrats have shut down the government and said, we want to renegotiate all health care while the government's closed down. We're now the ones saying, you've lost your mind. We are not going to do that while the government's
closed down. By the way, I remember a lot of Republicans against Ted Cruz doing that.
I got it.
Yeah. So here we go. You admit that, you know, you don't want to, if people are paycheck to paycheck and their premiums are doubling, you have you feel bad for them. I don't care, Republican or Democrat.
Sure. Yeah.
So that is going to happen. So that's about to happen because the subsidies were sunset. The tax breaks were sunset and the subsidies were sunset in the pandemic because according to reports, the pandemic is over.
Right.
Everybody knows this.
Everybody knows that.
But in the big picture, let's say you guys get started and you wanted to address health care. Is there something you can do, or do you have to create? Can you operate on Obamacare, or do you have to create a new Frankenstein? Do you have to create something new? And that's going to take time.
It's going to take time. Obamacare is just American healthcare now. I mean, people say, let's get rid of Obamacare. There's no way to really do that. You can't pull that. Every system has changed across the country. For instance, most physicians used to run in a private practice and then partner with the hospitals. Obamacare forced them into the hospitals. There are very few private practice physicians left in the country anymore. You can't just turn that off. That's not how that changes. That's over a great deal of time on it. So for me, let's focus on some of the key areas they're talking about. If I just look at just the just what's called the marketplace, those are those 21 million people that are in Obamacare in the marketplace on it. That group in my state in Oklahoma, over a six-year time period, the cost of the premium of that group went up 200%. The cost of commercial insurance at the same time in my state went up 29%. So when we talk about Obamacare's unaffordable, Democrats want to keep dumping more and more subsidies onto it because the prices continue to skyrocket because of how they made it. So if they want to talk about health care, the president's already said, I'm glad to talk about health care. I'm glad to talk to them about health care because the federal taxpayer is getting drowned in the cost of Obamacare. And there's a way to do it cheaper. It's already being done on commercial side of things. It doesn't have to be done the way they shaped it.
So about 40 seconds. A lot of people want to say the insurance companies are the gougers. Are they the bad guys in this?
Well, they're getting a huge cut. What the Democrats put in was they gave a subsidy because they didn't want high protections in it. So to make sure they could help pay for abortions, they weren't actually sending the money to the individual. They were sending it to the insurance company. Then the insurance company got a $1,000 bonus if they signed people up for no premium on it. And so we have just thousands. We think millions of people that don't even know they have coverage that have been just signed up because the insurance company gets the premium. They get the payment to them without having anybody take anything out.
This is really not politics. Politics are like a cartoon. This is a technical conversation that needs to take place.
Why you can't do it in a shutdown.
Right. I think so. But again, no end in sight.
Yeah, no end in sight at this point. Democrats are still locked in. They're trying to please their far left base.
And people living paycheck to paycheck will pay the price and soon SNAP and everything
and
else.
And soon SNAP goes away. That's right.
And your staff is working for free, too.
My staff's
and
working
you're
for
holding
free.
Back your check.
I have told Dispersing not to be able to give my check to me. It's not coming until after the shutdown's over.
All right, and I have news, guys. You don't get rich as a senator. Senator Lankford, always great to have you in.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
Thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know, athletes, they may say, hey, we don't care about parlays. But they care about it because it affects them. Mentally it affects them. And, you know, they don't want to have to come to a game and be worrying about their own fans cheering them or booing them because they didn't make the parlay. They're supposed to get 25 points, but they got 22, 23 points. And what it does is it changes the narrative of the game. But there's so much that comes along with that. So, yes, it do need to be some ramifications around it. And I'm sure the powers that be are looking into that.
And I just think there's got to be extreme education on this. I know they're doing extreme education on financing. The average NBA career is 3 years, and you're not going to get this money again. There's got to be extreme education and scared straight when it comes to betting. I'm on the record. I know I love betting. That's why I want no part of it. It's an addiction I don't need that I thoroughly understand. I don't understand drugs and alcohol, but I understand betting because you think you can win. You think you can outthink them. You want to bet on yourself. But with that comes the cheating and the addiction. So keep it out. But now it's in sports forever.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Got a big hour coming your way and a lot going on in the country today. We have the President of the United States going to pack up for a week. He's got to be heading to Malaysia first, go to a conference. But the big news will happen on Thursday, our time, when he's going to meet one-on-one with President Xi. That should be big. Shannon Bream is standing by. We'll talk about that. Also, a good friend of the show, good friend of mine, LifeFact founder Arthur Lee is going to be here. He's got a great threshold. He just crossed in terms of lives saved. Also, when it comes to China, he has a message for the president. Get that country to stop knocking off our stuff. Believe it or not, you watch LifeVac as this huge boom for sales and success. And China goes, I noticed. So we'll knock it off in China. We'll put it on Amazon and you'll compete with your own product. And you think that's a unique situation? It's sadly commonplace. Also, Bruce Schneider is going to be with us, author of Rewiring Democracy, How AI Will Transform Our Politics, Government, and Citizenship. You think? Let's bring in Shannon Bream. Shannon, are you ready to pick out an outfit and guests for Fox News Sunday?
I can't say I picked out the outfit, but we do have some guests which will help you with your show prep for Sunday night.
Go ahead.
So we do have Democrat Senator Tim Kaine and Republican Senator Rand Paul. They are going to come on together to talk about where they agree on things, but also where they disagree. And I think the shutdown is going to be front and center in a lot of foreign policy, too.
So you booked all the libertarians on the Republican Party in one swoop.
I did. I mean, we like to just get it done, kind of a roundup.
Yeah. So he was not invited to the White House and kind of bent out of shape. But why would he be? He keeps voting. He votes against the continuing resolution. He's condemning the president for his strikes on those fishing boats in Venezuela. So that's Rand Paul. That's him and Tim Kaine will really hit it off.
He did vote yesterday to fund the federal employees. And he did have a couple of Democrats join him, too. So, they're going to just keep voting on stuff that's not going to happen, apparently, in the Senate. And they're gone for the weekend, and House is nowhere to be found because they said, listen, we passed RCR. It's up to the Senate to figure this out. So no one's here this weekend who can actually vote on this stuff, but still I'm going to try to solve the problem.
You know, what's interesting is I was relieved that you were not caught up in the NBA betting scandal. Were you
worried?
It
was touch and go.
Were you worried?
I do wear glasses, but they're not special and they can't read cards.
Right. And most of your tables are not x-ray tables. Is that correct?
I mean, that you know of.
Right. Listen to Kash Patel yesterday, cut 7.
These individuals got in bed with La Casa Nostra and 4 of the 5 major crime families in New York City to create gambling empires, to rob people of their money, to extort people, to commit acts of wire fraud, to rig games and poker games and basketball games just so they could make a few extra bucks. And then they had the protection of the mafia in New York around this country so that they could continue this scheme to fleece innocent victims of tens of millions of dollars.
The rest of it comes its way in terms of fixing games and throwing games and prop bets on the side are really, they're really alarming. But the other thing is where the lengths people will go to cheat at poker and gambling is nuts, especially when it's legal now in 39 states. Mm-hmm. I knew this was going to be a problem, Shannon. And the NBA, again, this is the third one. They got the referee. They had the Raptors player, Porter, Dante Porter from 2 years ago, and now they got this. And my sense is it is not just Chauncey Billups, and it is not just Rozier.
Yeah, I mean, there could be more to come. It sounds like in some of the language we've had around this announcement that this might be just the beginning. So I don't know where this goes, but I was talking to your lovely and talented Pete with your team ahead of during the commercial, and we're like, why did these multimillion-dollar guys do this? I mean, because – yeah, there's big money to be made, but it's being spread across if the allegations are true, these organized crime groups and that kind of thing. But how much are these players making? An extra 10 grand here or there? I mean, to them, that's dinner. I don't know why, unless they just need the thrill of the danger of it, or if it really does add up to real money for them at some point, but they're already making real money. So
yeah, they say
get dragged into this, allegedly?
Well, Jim Trusty, a good friend of yours and mine, and of our shows, he's representing Rozier, and he said he's been working with the FBI for 2 years. So he doesn't understand why it resulted in an arrest.
Well, and this has been going on. Obviously, this investigation has been going on and predates, it sounds like, this administration. They DOJ was worried that there was something going on here a while back. And I get what Jim is saying. Like, listen, we've been trying to negotiate with them to have him brought in. Instead, it was kind of, an interesting optic yesterday when you have multiple arrests going down at the same time, big name people being dragged out, But if you are, if it was you or me engaging in the fake contacts and weird gambling stuff, I mean, we'd probably get dragged out in cuffs, too.
Right. Pete, what else did Shannon say to you leading up to this?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Tell me everything.
And even
though
she was saying how great I am, and she was singing Eric's praises, and then she eventually got around to saying, Brian's an okay person.
Right. Oh, good.
Yeah. Well,
that's an interesting way to get my guests ready.
Brian gets so much praise and adulation,
really?
Like 24/7.
I mean, really?
That I feel like Pete deserves some, and Brian needs to just be kept modest and humble, you know, because otherwise he's just getting his ego fed all day and all night.
I praise Pete on every holiday, except for Boxer Rebellion Day.
Does that include like Festivus, May Day, like which holidays?
Right.
I want to make sure he's getting his due.
Usually Thanksgiving. And,
that's a good one. You're thankful.
And
for
Armistice
Pete.
Day, the end of World War One.
Because he's a peacekeeper, Pete.
That's what I look at him as. Absolutely. So I want you to hear. I know you saw Brett's show last night as Governor J.B. Pritzker won on, and he has no problem doubling and tripling down and making ICE agents the villains and Donald Trump Hitler. I mean, his explanation is so unbelievable. I couldn't even sleep last night because he tried to rationalize bringing up and comparing the Gestapo, Hitler, World War II, Germany, Nazi Germany, and Donald Trump and ICE. Listen to this explanation, cut 21. Hold on
what
tight.
What I can tell you is that Alberto Pinochet was an authoritarian. There are lots of authoritarians that I could point to. It happens that I know best because I helped build a Holocaust museum sitting next to Holocaust survivors about what the Nazis did in those early years.
No, I understand that.
I'm not talking about the Holocaust. I'm talking about what they were doing, taking away people's rights, arresting people, asking them for papers. Right. Early on in an authoritarian regime, wherever it is in the world throughout history, this is what happens. It's the beginning of something very bad for our country, especially a constitutional republic.
I mean, just I wanted you to get your way in on that, Shannon. Is to me, to take our law enforcement arm and compare them to the Gestapo and illegals and say, I'm going to use local cops to arrest federal officers, which is going to get them arrested. Your thoughts about his explanation?
First of all, I'm upset that you missed any sleep because you don't get much sleep.
Right.
And I think that's key.
I would say tossing and turning.
Okay, tossing and turning. And I was too over this because what does the message end up being? That ICE agents are the bad guys. And so people who show up and protest and potentially, you know, lobbing objects at them, attacking them, threatening them. If you're telling people the message is those are the bad guys, they're going to feel justified like, oh, we need to take out this threat to our community. Now, what does that mean? You may say we're against violence. But again, if you're pointing to people and saying they're Nazi-like or Hitler-like, when you ask most people, would you take out Hitler if you had a chance? People will say yes. Well, if you're equating these guys to being some kind of illegal, undermining, insidious murderers, then people are going to show up and feel justified in going after them. So you have to think about what your language is doing when you say things like Pritzker said to Brett last night.
So, Shannon, we look forward to your show on Sunday.
Uh-huh. What about your show on Sunday?
On my show on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, we're going to have Michael Francisi, who is a former Columbo Bob boss, who has now got a podcast, and I want to get why the mob was involved in this.
Yes.
Kurt Schilling is going to talk about this, too. Senator Bill Cassidy is going to be there on the shutdown. Brett Baer, you never met him in person, and I hadn't until this moment. He's going to be talking about his book and so much more, including redistricting. So we're going to have a big, big show.
And if you missed your yearly checkup, Dr. Senator Cassidy could check on you.
Yes.
Although maybe, is he the OBGYN? He might not be the right guy for you.
I'm pretty sure.
I think he delivers babies.
He's
so
got a different specialty. I'm not putting it down, but it just wouldn't help me.
I don't think it's going to help you, but I will watch your show on Sunday night just because it sounds fabulous. And you're finally going to get to the dance break, which you always promise me.
One day I'm going to dance us out. Thank you.
I look forward to it.
Shannon, have a great show. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back with Arthur Lee, one of America's finest inventors, and it was a few years ago. Arthur, what year did you invent the light back?
About 13 years ago now.
13 years ago. When was it mass-produced?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. And how many saves have you made, has the light back made?
We're coming up on 5,000, 4,890. I suppose almost 3,000 kids.
And what you do now is when you can. By the way, you have a lot more saves. It's just so people think to write back to you, right? So you have a hall of saves, right?
Yeah.
So tell everybody what it's like.
Well, it's a cathedral. If you save 5,000 lives, 3,000 kids. Well, how do you see 3,000? It's a number. The hall of saves has pictures of everyone we've saved that's been reported. Mm-hmm. and it's 20-foot ceilings. The walls are covered, and now the ceiling's getting covered. And for me, it's a cathedral.
And you have no background in this except you were born with this engineering person, you know, this engineering gene that your dad had. You have a sense like, I could invent that, right?
Well, I'm a boomer kid. You know, my parents, I didn't know someone could fix your house, fix your car, cut your lawn, build a roof. We did it all ourselves. He did it all himself, and he taught me. My grandfather, too. So I was brought up learning how to build, make, whatever you got to do. So I just turned that to saving lives.
So when you see someone like Mondami, 34 years old, says, I got to tax these rich people and these business people are getting away with so much, and we got to maybe take 60% of your wealth. How hard did you work? How much risk did you take in putting together your company?
Well, I've done it twice, and anyone that votes for him is out of their minds. And basically, for resume purposes, you don't have the capability to do what you're approaching the world to do. I think it's scary.
Getting money from the people who are the most productive, who employ the most people, who take the greatest risk, they just don't appreciate it when you don't have that business background.
You never run a business.
Right.
I mean, I honestly think that if you never signed your paycheck and everyone else's, that you have a different mindset. If you receive a paycheck versus sign them or sign your own, you really just cannot predict what it's like.
So it's a great feeling for another great American company. You make the product here. You have your own warehouse. So you're renting, you're leasing, you're employing. So it's helping everybody, and let alone save lives. But you told me a year or two ago, you said all of a sudden the Chinese start knocking off your product. And you said you found out when you started researching this and try to protect LifeVac, you find out this happens all the time and there's almost nothing you can do. How have you fought back against knockoffs?
Well, the problem is that the patent is obsolete. And people would see a knockoff and tell me, oh, you know, you have a patent, you could sue. Ever since the advent of Amazon, 53% of sellers on Amazon are Chinese. So we're done. The patent is worthless. What happens is your product hits a certain sales level, they copy it, they send it in. And, you know, it used to be you moved to China to make something cheaper, right? Labor was cheaper. It's not the case. We have automation. Most things are made. We can make them here as cheap or cheaper. But the problem is when your product hits a success level, they knock it off. Well, they don't pay taxes. They don't pay marketing. They don't pay insurance. They have no liability. They have no risk of being prosecuted. So when you save, the biggest cost in a product is marketing, right? They just come in cheaper. So with the advent of
Amazon. You do the marketing
Amazon,
for them.
Yeah.
And people buy by mistake. They think they're buying your product.
That happens. That was a big problem, the first big problem, where they just copied everything. But then they just create a different brand, and it's cheaper. But the public is confused. They think the patent helps you. It doesn't. It's worthless. And
America, it helps you. I could knock off your LifeVac, right?
No. If you're here.
Yeah.
But if you're in China, which is what happens, and now 63% of new sellers, we're talking $638 billion going out of our country untaxed and not regulated.
Didn't they freeze your account?
Yeah.
How? Why?
Well, because what happened is we're a little different.
No, I'm talking about Amazon.
Yeah, we're a little different because there is some protection. Now, they were selling for 3 years, millions of units.
The FDA finally stopped.
Well, we're losing those sales. But more than the money, they fall apart. They're dangerous. They don't work. We put a lot of effort
into it. And then your reputation suffers.
Yeah. And it's fragile. I mean, 10 years, documented 5,000 lives, interaction and cooperation with the FDA. And it's still a fragile environment. The Red Cross finally added it to a recommendation if protocol fails or cannot be done. Meaning you're too big, you're in a wheelchair. But that's 10 years of data and hard work and a slim reputation that this is a good idea.
Don't you believe Amazon could be doing more?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the answer is that if you sell in the U.S., you have to have a U.S. base, right? You have to have a bank, so you pay taxes and you're liable, meaning it's a bad product, you cause a death. Right now, you can make anything. It could kill you, and there's nothing you could do about it.
That's unbelievable. So you've wasted a lot of money in legal fees and trying to hunt this down and get your product and So that's really been a hindrance. Did you find that other people have the same complaints, other entrepreneurs, other business people?
Yeah, I think it's even worse probably. You know, we talked to a woman. She invented a jump rope. She was a jump rope champion, built a company, 60 employees. She hit that level where China kicks in. They were all fired and all gone. Instead of us outsourcing jobs.
Which, what happened?
She went out of business.
She went out of business on a knockoff product from China.
Yeah. What happens is the difference. We used to oversee jobs, right? We lose American jobs for manufacturing, right? It's cheaper. That's gone because we can make it here. The difference now is we are losing American jobs because the company that starts it goes out of business from the knockoff that comes in that doesn't have the cost, no taxes, no people.
Did you find anybody at Amazon or the Federal Trade Commission that understands your situation and is incensed about it, is as incensed as you are?
No. And I think I went to Washington. I met with the Justice Department. I met with the Patent Office. Patent Office, you know, that's the way it is. You know, it's a civil matter if you steal my patent. So I'm supposed to go to China. It's not going to work. Justice Department was going to put out a PSA on knockoffs. They didn't do it. But the solution is if you sell here, you have to have an entity here because then you'd be taxed and I could go after you. And that it's a simple solution, but, you know, there's a lot of money going in a lot of people's pockets that look the other way on this.
Well, and so as you have life back now out there, where are you finding, where are you going? You're going internationally to try to tell you. I mean, this life back's in Ireland. It's all around the world, right?
No, it's where we save lives in 37 countries now. And, you know, we're making a lot of progress. The state of Texas, and you know the governor there, great man. He's disabled. They passed a law that's got to be in every school to protect the children and those with disabilities. So it's the first state to be ADA compliant. This is the beginning of the end of several school deaths every year. We've saved 98 kids in school already.
Right. And when you get it, you have to know how to use it. Remember where you put it. And try to keep it accessible, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's why we sell a home and travel. I mean, it's really a cool story. Yesterday, the guy who saved his child, the 3,000th person saved, side of the road, people pulled up behind him and came running with life vests.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're going to change the world.
And it's the thing happening. Is, with the Ring doorbell and with cameras with cops, you can see all this stuff. What website do we go to?
Lifevac.net.
And we'll see some of the things and some of the saves?
Oh, you can see the children being saved. Wow. It's an amazing thing.
Beautiful. Amazing thing, Arthur. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, pal. I appreciate it.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Special thanks to Arthur Lee for coming in, Shannon Bream for helping us out. Now it's time to bring in Bruce Schneier. He's the author of a brand new book, Rewiring Democracy, How AI Will Transform Our Politics, Government, and Citizenship. And you can see him on the stream as he zooms right in. Great to see you, Bruce. Tell me, what was your approach to this? When did you realize a book had to be written about AI in the middle of expanding AI?
You know, we started writing it about 2 years ago. It's a crazy process. We're writing things that we think of as future and then they happen, so that we write them in the past. I mean, AI is changing so many things so fast that we just wanted to get a handle on the whole of it.
So how is it going to work in our democracy where there's open competition to push us forward? But it's clear, as much as we're competing with the Elon Musk and the Altmans, it's really together the Americans against the Chinese, correct?
You know, I don't buy the arms race argument. I mean, this research happens in the open. I mean, they made the DeepSeek model, which is the Chinese model that did so well because they couldn't get the good American chips. All that research is public. We learn from that. They learn from us. It really is humanity as a whole building this technology. And, you know, in democracy, it's not just politics. We look at the legal system. We look at government administration. We look at writing laws. We look at citizens. It's affecting everything. And we talk about fake news, but it's really a lot more than that.
So with a democracy, you say that AI could help with legislation. How would it aid in the democratic process?
So we are seeing tools for AI to write legislation. You might think, oh, my God, how can AI do that? But right now, lobbyists write legislation. And having something that is more impartial that the legislator can use. And again, don't think national, think local, think state, think city. Like, no one has staff, no one has budget. Assistive tools will help people write legislation, and that's more democracy.
So how has it gone so far, do you think?
You know, not great. A lot of that has to do not with the technology, but with the economic incentives. The large companies building this for shareholders, not for society, means they're not great for democracy. We're seeing changes. There's a model came out of Switzerland, which is entirely public, non-corporate. Super interesting. Singapore has done one. France has a model for its legislators. Now, I'm not saying we use those, but we as society can decide to build some alternatives. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
So far, they say the U.S. government seems to have approaching AI advancement, not the in a way like we did the Manhattan Project. They understand the need to win, and President Trump has put that in everybody, a bug in everybody's ear. And he hired the right people, and David Sacks, who's at the cutting edge of all this, and his speed dial is all the people that brought us this modern age of social media. Do you think that they get it? Have this administration shown they get it?
I think not. I mean, this is the opposite of the Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project was the government hires a bunch of people, puts them in a lab, and says, build a bomb in secret. This is being done by corporations, not by government. So it is the opposite, right? Manhattan Project was entirely regulation. This is zero regulation. Something in the middle might be nice, where we get the benefits of both the market and what the public can do that is not market focused. And we're not seeing that in the U.S.
And so you would like to see the government work on a separate track than private industry?
You know, separate and with, right? That Swiss model was a Swiss government with ETH Zurich, with a major research institution. And they built that together. I mean, that's not a replacement for corporate AI, but that is another example in the mix. And we have to figure out who to trust. You know, are we going to trust a model from a company we don't trust, a country we don't trust? A lot of it is about trust, and it's also about power. And I want to see this be democratizing and not further increase power.
So people want to be more efficient. Companies want to be more efficient. They're going to ask their model what they do and how they fix it, whether it's a dry cleaner or a restaurant or a manufacturing base. I understand that. But also the people are worried about jobs, where AI can do your job better and for no money. Should people be worried, or should there be somebody cognizant of not AIing ourselves out of workers?
I think the market will AI workers away, right? The market seeks efficiencies. It doesn't seek, you know, the benefit to society. I think it's going to be a real problem. You think about apprentice-based professions, right? It's not plumber. It's lawyer. It's doctor. It's accountant. It's architect, right? Junior-level positions, there'll be fewer of them at best. I mean, I don't think there'll be none of them. There'll be fewer of them. And we need to figure out at a society what to do about that. These are hard questions. Remember, Andrew Yang talked about it. I mean, you might not agree with him, but he did talk about that in the when he was running for president. And I want to see these conversations. They're hard to have because they're really about changing society, and we're not good at that.
And what about robots?
What about robots? I, for one, welcome my robot overlords. I think that's harder. Great advances in robotics. Working in factories, right? Amazon is going to increase robotics, but they've been in auto manufacturing for decades. You know, we know how to deal with robotics, but it's going to be the same thing about job replacement. And also, it might be ways they enhance humans. It could not necessarily replace an attorney, but make a human attorney better. So we got to watch the way that goes.
Would you say that we got to do this responsibly? There's a danger if we develop this in a way that could be a hindrance, not only to our democracy, but get more powerful. And they're going to be very soon be smarter than the humans, correct?
You know, not in general. I don't think that. They'll be more capable in some ways. Right? They might be faster than the humans. They might be more sophisticated in certain respects. I mean, an AI basically won a Nobel Prize last year for protein folding, a super esoteric mathematical task that the AI just does better. It's not smarter than us in general, but these specific tasks are what you really need to think about, not general intelligence.
Tristan Harris, who's got the Council for Responsible Human Engineering, who's one of the foremost experts on this, he was in our studio, and you know him from Social Dilemma, talked about the addictive powers of these apps that we live on. Here he is talking about hacking.
AI being able to simulate language. Our democracy, our society runs on language. When you can hack language and manipulate language, code is language, law is language, contracts are language, media is language. When I can synthesize anyone saying anything else and then flood a democracy with untruths, this is going to exponentiate a lot of the things that we saw with social media, which, you know, for your listeners, we were behind the film The Social Dilemma on Netflix, which really highlighted how if you let a machine that runs on viral information, your society can sort of spin out into untruths really, really fast.
Is that a worry?
That's not an AI problem, right? That problem was true in 2016 with Russian propaganda before AI. AI exacerbates it, but it's not new. And the problem there is inauthentic humans. So we are going to need some way to know whether there's a human or a non-human on the other end of any communication. And we're going to have to solve that problem even without AI.
How do you do that? I mean, there's got to be a demand. I mean, I don't know how you do that technologically.
Yeah, so I mean, there are ways to do it. I mean, some of the captures, you know, those captures you have to fill out to prove you're a human on websites, they work mediocrely. The question is demand. I mean, this goes again to the markets. I mean, social media companies that thrive on engagement, which thrives on division and outrage, I mean, they kind of don't want to get rid of those things because they're not profitable. Here again, governments can step in. These are hard problems. We need to solve them. But I think they're more democracy problems than AI problems.
Do you think this could help us out in the court system when people are looking for justice? I know a jury of your peers are a jury of your peers, but do you think that could help expedite some with the backup in the courts?
A lot of research of that. And that's happening right now and weirdly in Brazil. Brazil is, I didn't know this, even more litigious than the United States. They have an enormous backlog. And the courts are using AIs not to make decisions, but to more efficiently make the process work. But you can imagine mediation by AI, right? If you and I were in a contract relationship, we could put that on a contract today. Instead of going to a mediator, we, you know, fire up a chatbot, we each complain on text, and the AI makes a decision, and we decide that it's binding. I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think there is going to be some of that in the same way we avoid the court system today and go to a human arbitration.
Is there a fear that they'll become your psychiatrist?
I think so. We are seeing, and more generally, synthetic friends, artificial friends, parasocial relationships. I think this is a huge problem. I don't know how to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I am worried.
So Bruce, people describe your book as an optimistic look. Do you think it's an optimistic look on the possibility of AI and democracy?
Yeah, you know, I think it's realistic. I think we're largely optimistic, but it comes down to the humans. If we as humans choose to use this technology for democracy, it will help democracy. The same technology in authoritarian countries makes authoritarianism better, right? It's better for surveillance. It's better for social control. So it's what the humans choose to do. So I need to be optimistic about the humans in our society, which makes me optimistic about them using technology for good.
And Bruce, what do you use it for?
I don't use it for much, right? I'm a writer. That's what I do. I enjoy writing. So it never actually occurs to me. My students use it all the time. I try to get them to use it critically. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I succeed.
Are you able to tell what's their work and what's AI's work?
I think I generally can. I think we all think we generally can. I'm sure some slips through. You know, I'm okay if students use it as assistive tech. To a grammar checker is now AI. Right, if they use it, I tell them, feed your essay and have it critique it. That's a good use of AI. Just don't have it write for you. I think I can tell. They probably fool me.
Bruce Schneier, thanks so much for joining us. Rewiring Democracy, How AI Will Transform Our Politics, Government, and Citizenship gives you some great ideas. Congratulations again, Bruce.
Thank you.
You got it. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
My fantasy dream is that this nightmare ends in 2029. And I think we ought to have radical thing. I think they all ought to have their head shaven. They should be put in orange pajamas. And it should be marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. And the public should be invited to spit on them. All of these collaborators should be shaved, pajamaed, and spit on.
James Carville's out of his mind. Probably, who knows where that comes from, but know what he's referring to? He's saying essentially when the Trump administration's done, that should be the result. As opposed to breaking down, analyzing, see how to win the midterms, that's a guy that's beyond frustrated, beyond angry, and knows how wrong he was. He guaranteed Kamala Harris would win, and she got crushed. And now he comes out and he wants to tell everybody she was a terrible candidate, never any good. Joe Biden was out of it, but never said anything at the time. Just a blatant partisan. But that is totally out of control for him to say stuff like that. Because if people are on the edge, they know James Carville, he's been around forever, and they say, well, if that's what he's thinking, maybe I'll take things into my own hands. It's totally irresponsible, but it is somewhat par for the course. You see some of the other things that people are saying online? I mean, every day there's a different example of someone saying something you think that's not possible that they actually meant it. This woman, Jolanda Jones, is running to replace Sylvester Turner in Houston, one of 10 candidates, and talked about how she's approaching the Trump administration. Cut 40.
I'm from the hood, okay? So when a bully comes, like, if there are no rules, you literally have to figure it out. So Donald Trump has changed things, and people trying to do what's always been done is not going to work. So if you hit me in my face, I'm not going to punch you back in your face. I'm going to go across your neck.
Do you believe this? I mean, you would think you're interviewing somebody from the Latin Kings or the Bloods or the Crips, but this woman's in a suit giving an interview on CNN, and there was zero pushback. Slit your throat. Are you crazy? James Carville, have your head shaved, put on an orange jumpsuit, and march down the street where people can spit on you? It's absolutely insane. Then you got an attorney general candidate over in Virginia with text messages that say they want to shoot a Republican's family, including their children, in front of them. Governor Glenn Youngkin is doing his best to make sure his lieutenant governor, Winsome Sears, becomes the next governor. Abigail Spanberger will not condemn Jay Jones, say what he did was bad, but I still has my endorsement. Here's Governor Glenn Youngkin yesterday, cut 43.
You know they got problems because Barack Obama's got to come to town, and Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania and Wes Moore are all coming to campaign for her. And I think everybody needs to ask them, what do you think about Jay Jones? Do you think that he should serve as attorney general in the Commonwealth of Virginia, a place where law enforcement can no longer hold their head up because there's a candidate for attorney general who wants to put two bullets in someone's head and see his children die? This is a moment for clarity, for moral clarity. Abigail Spanberger has none, and the Democrats don't either.
So the governor is desperate. I mean, if he could run for another term, he'd be knocking her out of the park. And he's a fantastic politician who made a huge, had a huge killing as a CEO of major companies, a great success story. I'm sure he's going to join the Trump administration should something open up. But I think likely he'll run for president unless it's so obvious JD's got the nomination locked up. Before I go, I want to talk about the mayor's race in New York. Eric Adams made a move yesterday. He despises Andrew Cuomo, and Andrew Cuomo hates Eric Adams. But yet they combined forces to stop 34-year-old Zohran Mamdani. Listen to Eric Adams, who was hanging out, Governor Cuomo, at the Knicks game Wednesday. Cut 44.
I'm fighting for the family of New York. That's why I'm here today, to endorse Andrew Cuomo to be part of this fight. And I'm going to give it my all these next few days to make sure that black and brown communities specifically who have believed there's nothing at stake in this election for them.
So Cuomo, obviously there, they're going to campaign together, said this, cut 46.
First, I want to thank Mayor Adams for his support, but more than for his support, the mayor put his own ambition aside because he cares more about New York City. And he believes Zohran is an existential threat to New York City. And we all have to do our best to make sure that Zohran does not become the next mayor.
I agree. You know, it's great for Republicans, but it's not great for New York City. It'll just be absolutely terrible. The education system, the corporate tax rate's going to go flying up. If I know he doesn't have the power to do it, but Albany's going to say, I 100% agree with you. And he's going to be getting a ton of interviews. But I just think that you watched a guy that upon further review has got no experience and his ideas are absolutely terrible. And he's going to go to the Socialist Party that put him in his place in order to get his policies. Mandami heard about that and put this out on Twitter. Today confirms what we've known all along. Andrew Cuomo is running for Eric Adams' second term. It's no surprise to see two men who share an affinity for corruption and Trump capitulation align themselves to the behest of the billionaire class and president himself. We're going to turn the page on politics of big money and small ideas. Couple of things about Eric Adams. He was the one, after initially welcoming in the buses from Texas, he was the one who said to about Joe Biden, you got to fix the border. We're being overwhelmed in New York City. And Biden iced him out. He was iced out and it was investigated heavily by the Biden administration's Justice Department. So that took guts. And nobody thinks that Governor Cuomo gave in to President Trump. Trump doesn't think that. They've known each other. He went to Trump's second wedding or first wedding. Nobody thinks that. So whoever wrote that statement didn't even do an accurate job of doing it. There's plenty of stuff to go after both of them for. But we'll have to see. It's going to be a sprint to the end. It's up to New York to show up. Only 400,000 showed up for the primary. There were 5.6 million people in the city. You got to think that they don't want any of that. Listen, don't forget, November 1st in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs on Fox Nation, BrianKilmeade.com, for tickets.